And finally,
that's a lot of stuff. Basically, a very confusing yellow piece of paper. It's happening February 18th and 19th in Winter Park, Florida. It's going to be in Akron Archives, Area 1415 History, blah, 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 something like that. But anyways, it looks good. And that's all. And we are fellowshipping at Little Greek. And 10% off, and they're going to be open late just for us. Thank you.
If you could please silence your cell phones at this time. Also, we ask that if you could please refrain from getting up and down during the speaker. But if you must, please do so quietly. If you're going to smoke, we ask that you please be away from any building. Also, we ask that you refrain from smoking e-cigarettes inside the building. If you find it necessary to smoke, please take it outside. And please be respectful as we are guests of the church. And Chelsea will be coming up to do the tradition.
My name's Chelsea. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible of those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And Jennifer will come up to do the chips.
Hi everyone, I'm Jennifer, I'm an alcoholic. And here at the Fourth Dimension Group, we give out a silver chip, 24-hour chip, for anybody that's new to our fellowship or coming back. Does anybody like to come get a silver chip? Surrender to win? Okay. And we have a red chip for 1 month or 30 days. That's our friend Daniel, 30 days.
Dink.
That's our friend Dink, 30 days. We have a gold chip for 2 months or 60 days. We're going to celebrate in 60 days. That's our friend John. And that's our friend Chris. Congratulations. And we have a green chip for 3 months or 90 days. We're celebrating 90 days.
Damn.
Congratulations. That's our friend Tim. We have a blue chip for 6 months. Everybody celebrating 6 months? Have cake. Here she comes. And that's our friend Alicia. We have a purple chip for 9 months. That's our friend Dawn.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. And that's our friend, our other friend EJ. Congratulations. And our group gives out black chips for 1 year. Anybody celebrating 1 year of sobriety? And we flip it over for multiple years. Anybody have multiple years of sobriety celebrating? That's our friend Billy with 3 years. Congratulations to all those who picked up a chip tonight. If you're in need of a big book or you'd like to purchase one, we have them for sale at our cost if you do not have the funds to pay for it. We have liberal credit arrangements, including nothing down and nothing a month till you can pay for it. But you can just come see us. We'll make sure you get a big book before you leave here tonight. Thank you.
And now our speaker will be coming up, Wayne B. from Monday Night Speakers of Thank You, Sir.
Okay.
My name is Wayne Butler. I'm an alcoholic.
Wayne.
My sobriety date is November 8th, 1977. I haven't had any booze, pills, powders, potions, or lotions that unnecessarily alter my emotions from that day to this. However, I was known to date mind and mood altering women. I got a black and blue chip for that. I want to thank Eric for inviting me to come participate tonight. And I want to thank my posse coming from Monday Night Speakers and Back Porch and wherever, out in Louisville, Kentucky. All the way from Louisville. Thank you. And thank you for being here. It would be a real boring meeting if I was by myself. Of course, my sponsor said I'm never really alone. So, during the announcements, when they mentioned the first 3 steps workshop, I think, the reason I'm here is because I made a decision. That's why I'm here tonight. I made a decision. And that decision was that I would, one day at a time, turn my will and my life over to the care of God as we understand Him. I mistook that for an awful long time. If you're new, I don't want to scare you off by talking this quick about God, but I'll get into the depth of my disease here momentarily. But, you know, when they wrote that step, they said, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. That's the pioneers, our founders. And they put it in our big book, how they understand God to be for our pioneers and our co-founders and first 100 men. And let me find it. I want to start with that just because it's important to me. And if you're new, perhaps it will be important to you because I ran my life on self-will. And I didn't know that. I just thought I was taking care of old Wayne. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. See, I didn't know what that was. I know I'm not God, so I didn't. That baffled me what that meant by quit playing God. And if you're new or newer, that has to baffle you too. Because I want to repeat, I know I'm not God. So what's that mean, I'm playing God? So next we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are His agents. He is the Father, we are His children. And then he goes on to say, He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. And that's how they understood God in 1939. They understood God to be the new employer, to be the director, to be the Father, the Creator. And that's the decision I made, albeit ever so slowly. But that is why I'm here tonight, because I made that decision. And then I took action on that in step four so I could clear a path so that I could perform His work well in AA. And that's really more important than what you newcomers could possibly know at this moment in time, because I didn't understand it when I was new. But alcohol was wonderful. I love to drink. I do. I'm a Budweiser man. King of beers. You know what? I haven't had a sip of Budweiser for over 39 years, one day at a time. And there's days I still miss it. Right, I do. You know, I'll sometimes drive by a Budweiser billboard and I'll slow down and have a moment of silence. That's not natural. I watched the Super Bowl only for halftime, because I want to see if Budweiser wins again. Now, some people would suggest that's an alcoholic mind. I just love Budweiser. And that's not even natural, because it tastes terrible, actually. I also like fine wine. Ripple. Now, don't raise your hand if you're under 40, because you're lying. How many of you drank Ripple? Come on. Hey, I know Roger you did for sure. See, I'm going to tell you why those of you under the age of 40 never drank Ripple. Is because, remember when the EPA came into existence? I think that was their first legal act, was to shut that chemical plant down. I also like Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. I like that because when I puke, it looks like I'm bleeding internally. And I can get women to feel sorry for me because I tell them I'm dying from cancer. I know how you are. I also like Little Mad Dog Doocy Doocy. Cisco, I rode the night train. Now you drink like that. I want you to know something. If you live on Skid Row, if you're a Skid Row rat like I was, let me tell you what this will do to your body if you drink this mixture. Budweiser, Boone's Farm, Mad Dog, Strawberry Hill, Cisco, and night train. It will give you alcoholic terminal diarrhea. Perhaps you haven't heard about that out here in this fancy town here. I'll tell you what that means. That means you go when it tells you to go. I swear before God, I had chronic diarrhea for 6 years. And when you've had chronic diarrhea for 6 years, you better have good decision-making skills. You're awful close. And split second timing. I had neither. I know what a real slip is, let me tell you. That one ain't in the big book, but I'll tell you where it is. And none of that brought me to a point where I wanted to quit drinking. And if you're new, I want you to know something. To this very day, I've never wanted to quit drinking. I swear to God. I don't want to quit drinking. I still have not quit drinking. Believe it or not, I still have not quit. I just haven't had a drink. That sounds kind of cheesy to some people, I think. But I have not consciously made a decision to quit drinking. I'm going to tell you how it happened in the time I'm allotted here. I'm going to tell you how that happened. It wasn't supposed to happen. I never, ever had any intention of quitting drinking. And I didn't even know why until I met you guys. And then got into the only guidebook that really speaks to the alcoholic. Enough to cause me to want to take actions for the benefit of my own recovery that goes against my free will. I was sleeping in a dumpster behind Larry's Oasis, 1972. It was Halloween night. I weighed 146 pounds. I'm 6'2" and a half. Never enough. I had body sores. My feet were rotted. I had just gotten early stage frostbite in my feet, which I still have trouble with my feet all these years later. And that didn't bother me enough to want to stop drinking. And if you're a Skid Row rat like me, you understand that. I was in that dumpster. It was about a little after midnight, about 1 in the morning, and I heard a knock on my dumpster lid. I was home. Alone. Some of you women are picky. I had 4 teeth after all. The Navy gave me a partial, but I lost it somewhere. Probably during one of my adventures over the toilet. I was wondering who was out there knocking on my door. And I knew it wasn't a dumpster pickup man, because when you're sleeping in a dumpster, you damn well better know when they're coming. And I got the nerve up to lift that lid up to see who was out there. And there stood the man that I feared and wanted dead more than anybody in my life, and that was my father. I prayed for him to die. If anybody was raised in an alcoholic home like I was, I need not say any more about that. The terror, the bewilderment. That did not make me an alcoholic, but it put a definite spin on my personalities, I'll tell you that right now. I just want to briefly tell you about my dad a moment. My dad was a truck driver. He ran illegal whiskey and cigarettes out of Chicago. My dad was mobbed up. My mom went right along with it. My dad drank whiskey. He drank a fifth of whiskey and he'd beat the hell out of my mother. And I'd think thoughts that I can't even believe I thought. And then my mom would drink tequila and beat the hell out of him. So it was really a show. And the terror that I know, the terror, I want to repeat, did not make me an alcoholic, but it put a definite spin on my trying to get sober and be sober. And some of you understand that. I'm not a victim anymore. I was. You bet I was. But victims don't get to stay sober because we're so busy living in the pain of the past. There can be no future, not without a drink. So thank God for this program and for the 4-step, because it drew me right out of victimhood, surprisingly, into adulthood. I didn't mean for that to happen either. Let me take about 5 minutes here to give you a little background from my life. I don't want you to... you might think I'm kind of psychiatric by the time I'm done with this part. Well, I kind of was. I was diagnosed 17 times. I've been in 17 psychiatric institutions. My family court committed me twice before I was 12. I self-signed in after that. I'm going to tell you why. In case you have a little slippy poo. You know, given the way I looked and the way I smelled and the way I drank and the way I acted, I couldn't get a date on the street to save my life. But you put me in a co-ed psych ward. Are you thinking about hurting yourself? Oh, yeah. Oh, you too, Doc. And then we'd go. I found out if you tell a doctor you want to kill him, they'll put you away. So Spoiler alert. I don't know if you saw the movie Days of Wine and Roses. It's kind of an old movie. But I remember that part where that woman is kneeling in the alley, looking into that mud puddle. That's my bottom. Couldn't stand looking at myself. You know, a lot of people have very different bottoms, different stories. I really wish mine was badder than what my sponsor informed me is bad enough. But I think just with my mindset, I just wish it would have been like blowing something up or something, like really bad, you know. But it wasn't like that. It was, let me preface it. I went to Sunday school every Sunday. I love church. I'm not going to badmouth it. I love church. I love everything about it. I just can't stay sober there. And I went to Mount View Evangelical Free Church as a little boy. Matter of fact, I'm the only one in my family ever went to church. I actually liked it there. I really did. And there's a point to this story when I'm done for you newer people. Maybe some of you that might need to be renewed too. I don't know. But I'd go to Mount View Free Church every Sunday. And pretty soon I was going on Thursday. And pretty soon I was going on Saturday and Sunday and Thursday. And I had my own little seat. And they nicknamed me Lil Wayne. I hear someone stole that. Lil Wayne had a seat right underneath the crucifix. Please don't be weirded out by this. That's where I sat and that's where I felt safe. Felt safe until I had to go back to that madhouse where everybody was getting drunk and beating people up and shooting guns and doing things that no child like anybody should ever have to live with and or be introduced to. But I had to go home after church. And here's a question I posed to my mom when I was 8 years old. I'll never forget it. I went home to my mom. I had gone to Sunday school that Sunday morning. I'd gone to church. And Blackjack, it was a guy that gave out a stick of Blackjack chewing gum when you come in the door of the church. He did it just so our tongues would be black, so when we stuck it out at the preacher, they'd see it. And I got home from church, and I said, Mom, God loves me, doesn't He? And my mom said, Yes, He does. I said, Mom, Jesus loves me, doesn't He? My mom said, Yes, He does. I said, Mom, how come I hate myself? I'm 8. You see, I felt different from as far back as I can remember. And now I want to tell you about my first drink. I didn't mean to take it. I was in 8th grade, and I was eating pencils along the way and biting people. And Lil Wayne had gone bizarre is what he had done. And they didn't understand about alcoholism in the home back then. They didn't understand none of this stuff. So he's trying to figure Lil Wayne out. So they administered a new test called the IQ test. This is 1963. I took the IQ test. Now, how many of you have taken the IQ test? Just for fun. Okay. Call me out if I'm wrong. If you score over 100, you're pretty smart. You score a 120, you're borderline genius. You score a 150, there's an organization called Mensa that will come recruit you to think and pay you for it. By the way, they've never come to AA. I want to train you. That's what Alan said anyway. I scored a 57. I didn't cheat. And I got diagnosed mentally retarded. It wasn't special ed yet. It was mentally retarded. And they put me in what they called the retarded class. Now, if you have a special child, please don't be offended. I'm telling you my story the way it happened. I got put in a group home. And for about 3 months, it was much better than the home I was in until the insanity there started. And the things that happened to kids like that in school was happening to me, and I didn't understand it. I didn't know how to stand up to a bully. I didn't know. I was scared. I was Lil Wayne. I believed in turning the other cheek. I didn't want to offend the God of my understanding at that time. And so I took the beatings and took it to church. And I remember this one Friday, these three wrestlers grabbed three of us kids from the special class, and they locked each one of us in a hall locker, and they didn't find us till Monday. Now, I came out of that locker a little bit different when I went in. had to come to AA to find out I had a resentment. I just thought I was getting even. Guy named Tom, who's a fellow classmate and a tough guy, he found those three wrestlers and beat the hell out of them. I mean, he beat them bad. He became my protector. He later became a biker. You bikers love guys like me. You do. You looked out for us. I tell you this story because he was my first drink, if you will, seeking an effect produced. And Tom looked out for me all through school. And here's the first time. I was never going to drink brown whiskey because of what I saw it did to my dad. I didn't know it was alcohol. I just saw it was brown whiskey. And my mom was drinking that tequila, and I saw what it did to her, and I'm not drinking that, but I didn't understand this beer thing. I drink Pepsi-Cola, right? They bring us plenty of Pepsi-Cola at the home. And Tom takes me to the senior dance. I'm the only kid from that class of 11 that got to go to the senior dance. And I don't know what to do. You know, those of us in this, I'm calling it the special class now because I'm tired of that word. All we did was went across the street and played putt-putt miniature golf all day. They didn't have any type of advanced classes for those kids. And they said I was peculiar. And Tom took me to senior dance. I'm standing up against that wall, watching these boys and girls dance at this dance. And I've never been to a dance. I've been in 4 years of high school, never been exposed to a dance, never been exposed to the entire class. We've been shielded from the class. That doesn't make me alcoholic. Makes me a candidate for Al-Anon. Pretty quick, right? I didn't know that then either. Okay, fast forward. Tom, he's coming walking across the dance floor and he's got his hand tucked in his jacket. And he walks up on me and he pulls that hand out. And you know what he's got in it? He's got himself a long neck brown bottle with a red, white, and blue label called Budweiser. He said, "Here, kid, drink this. It'll make you feel better." I would have drank battery acid for Tom. I would have. Tom was my guy. I didn't know I was a guzzler. I tipped that bottle up and I emptied it out. I guzzled it down like I'd been thirsty my whole life. And I let out a big old belch and I said, "Tom, that tastes terrible. I want a Pepsi-Cola." Tom says, "That's okay, kid. Have another. You'll get used to it." Now, Tom... Here's what Tom meant by "you get used to it." And you know them normal social drinkers out there? They talk like this. They're funny. He says, "You'll get used to it." Now here's what he meant. See, Tom's dad was the second wealthiest man in my town. Tom had pressed clothes to go to school, high school in. All his clothes went to the dry cleaners, and that's how he came to high school. Tom got into his dad's liquor down in the basement. His dad's liquor was, the whole walls were just storage. And Tom got drunk. Had to go to the bathroom. Thought he was in the bathroom. He was in his bedroom. Thought he was standing over the stool. He was standing over an open dresser drawer. And he peed in his dresser. And he almost went crazy trying to flush it. And he said, "I'll never do that again." That was enough for Tom to wake up, and he's been a social drinker from that day to this very day. That's what Tom meant would probably happen to me. And it probably would have if I was one of the nine. But somewhere between four and five Budweisers, I had a spiritual experience. I got so good looking I couldn't stand it. Things grew. I got smart. I'm not retarded anymore. I don't know this intellectually. This is how I'm acting. And then I looked out on the dance floor and eyeballed me a blue-eyed blonde. Didn't know I was going to need freedom from blondage. I said to Tom, "You think she'll dance with me?" Now, she's out there dancing with some loser. And, of course, Tom, "Go ask her. Go ask her." I don't know what to say. I play putt-putt. I don't even know why I want to go talk to her. All of a sudden, I'm interested in her. So on my way out, I overheard, you know how we are, we take things out of the air and possess it. I heard someone say, can I cut in? So I used those words. I said, can I cut in? Now I thought I was cool and tall, dark, handsome. And retarded's cool right now. I found out later she said yes because she recognized me from the special class. She gave me a sympathy dance. We danced that dance and her date went off to the bathroom. He stayed too long because she started liking me. And you know, we danced the rest of the night together. She sent that date away. We found out later that night sex meant two people. I didn't know that. They weren't teaching it. They didn't want us knowing about reproduction in that class I was in. She ruined my sex life. I try not to make eye contact right about here. I've been having sex since I was 13, and I was good at it, and she ruined the whole, she complicated the entire procedure. Tom told me the next day I had a great time. And about 7 weeks later, we found out she's pregnant. Yep. Her dad was happy about that, I'll tell you. Her dad didn't care I was retarded. He wanted to kill me. And, this is 1968. And he said, marry her or die. I said, I'm in love. Now, in the state of Illinois, if you're a boy, 14 or older, if you have sex with a girl 16 or younger, it's statutory rape. So her dad knew that, and her dad said that I was going to go to prison for 20 years for statutory rape. And I said, either you're retarded. I don't know where that came from. And so we went to Palmyra, Missouri, where you can marry your cousin. Right? You can get married. You know, I was in St. Louis about 5 years ago telling that story, and I forgot for a moment St. Louis is in Missouri. They laughed. We got married. That's the first time I drank. My dad says, we better get you out of here. Now, I don't understand. I don't know how alcoholism has got me in the grips already. All I know is I want to drink again, and I don't know why. I don't even intellectually know what happened to me. I didn't know that something in that bottle, it's like lightning in a bottle, if you will. I didn't know that. I just want another beer. And the damning part of my condition is, and it's in our book, once I take one or two drinks, I cannot control and enjoy the rest that I drink. You see, I don't want to quit. I don't. Because something is in there that causes a spiritual awakening for Wayne Butler. I have a transformation. Why would I quit? Never occurred to me. Even sleeping in a dumpster, I was okay with the dumpster. My dad said, we better get you out of town because I think her dad's going to kill you. So he took me to the recruiter. This is 1968. I just graduated the retarded class. He takes me to the Marine Corps recruiter. He looks at my transcripts and he says, is that true? You were in that class? I said, yes, sir. I was the leader. And I was just as sincere then as I am right now. Because I know the Marines looking for leaders. And he went just like this. Take him next door. So we went to the Navy. They took me. I don't have time to go into all that. I think I've only got about 10 minutes left, as a matter of fact. Make a long story short, I ended up in Vietnam 3 weeks before I turned 18. Came home different than I went. That didn't make me an alcoholic, but it put a definite spin on my personalities. Got divorced because the divorce papers were waiting for me when I got back in Vietnam. I spent, altogether, I was gone 14 and a half months altogether. And I got 4 letters from my wife. I don't know if you know what that's like. I just can't even tell you how that felt. So when I got home, I signed those papers and I got drunk for the second time. Got into a blackout, and I'll be damned, in a 5-day blackout, I got married again. I came out of that blackout and didn't know who she was. I'm driving a car. I look at her and I said to her, "Who are you?" It occurred to me she's in the car. And I don't have a clue who she is. I said, "Who are you?" She hit me. Right there. I said, "What the hell you hit me for? Who are you?" She starts crying. Apparently you women don't like to hear that on your honeymoon. Apparently we got drunk and drove to Palmyra, Missouri. I don't go to Missouri unless I'm speaking for AA, because I get married in Missouri. All right. Fast forward, my dad standing over me at that dumpster. I have no desire to quit drinking. My dad was paying a 12-step call on me. He joined this cult called AA. And he asked if he wanted to come home with him. And I looked around my little room. I said, "No thanks, Dad, I'm doing fine." I did. And you know what? I was. That's why you can't get a guy like me off Skid Row. And some of you know that. Some of you are here. Why would I want to leave all that? I'm serious. There's nothing you could offer me. But that's how you got me. Fast forward again. I left that dumpster, ran into a woman who was a secret member of Al-Anon. She took me hostage. She kept me around the restaurant until her husband showed up. His name was Harvey. And Harvey, she knew something that I didn't know. She, in her Al-Anon program, they taught her the only hope. And I want you to hear this. The only hope for an alcoholic. The only hope is to have another alcoholic to work with. And so she kept me there for Harvey because Harvey was having a hard time staying sober. And Harvey showed up, shook my hand, thought he put money in it, but it was a brass coin that had 2 A's on it, which didn't mean a thing to me. He says, "Turn it over." You know how they are. They're here too. I know it. I can feel them. Make you wear suits and crap. So I turned it over as a prayer, serenity prayer. I know the prayer. Ain't nothing in it. Got nothing to do with money, food, or shelter. And then he told me to go to 410 16th Street, Moline, about noontime the next day, and there'd be friends of his there. He said, "You tell them Harvey sent you. I'll be along later. But you tell them Harvey sent you. They're going to help you." He did not say AA. He didn't take him long to figure out I had some psychiatric issues, it appeared. Had he told me I was going to AA, I wouldn't have went because I only drink beer. But I got down and he told me there'd be a light bulb hanging on a cord in the cellar doorway. It was in the basement of a condemned building. Go figure. He mentioned I was condemned too, but you might as well go check it. He said, "If the light's on, go in." The only reason I went there, folks, is because I was hungry and cold and tired. And I thought maybe I'd get a buck or two, maybe get some Pall Mall tailor-made cigarettes. That's why I went. That's the only reason I went. I got there the next day, and I got to this basement doorway, and I'm up on the street looking down there, trying to get courage to go down there. I looked for the light bulb, and I found it. And he said if it was on, go in, but it wasn't on. It was flickering. Do you know what that means? It means it's not on. It's on and off. And Harvey didn't tell me what to do if it was on and off. He said if it's on, go in. I lost my freaking mind. And I left and went down to Larry's Oasis and moved some Budweiser, got oiled up. And about 8 o'clock that night, I remembered they owe me. So I went back to that place about 8 o'clock that night because they owe me now. Now, I don't care if that light's on or gone because they owe me. I'm going in big and tall. And I went charging through that basement doorway, finding out it's about 5'10"-ish. I'm 6'3"-ish. I hit that door header at the eyebrow. The impact lifted me off of my feet, I swear to God. And I went into that meeting like this, boom. And then I slid about 4 feet. And inside that door, about 6 feet, was a round table with six or seven old men waiting to die. And I slid right between two of them. And this old, mean, disgusting, evil human existence stood up. Stood over me and went just like this. He did. And then he growled at me. They growl at you. Some of you know. There's a couple growlers in here. I can tell. He goes like this. Slide right in here, you big dummy. We got a wrench to fit every nut that comes in the door. And by the looks of you, it's going to have to be an adjustable wrench. And then he introduces himself. He says, my name's Barney. I don't care. And then he says, I'm an alcoholic. And I thought, now, but he's lifted me up off the deck, right? And he says, and I'm an alcoholic. And I said, I'm so sorry. And alcoholics like to one-up each other, right? So I said to him, I'm ADD. He says, I'll bet you are. I said, you know what else? He says, what? I said, I'm OCD. He goes, I bet you are. He says, you know what else? He took me off guard. I said, what? He says, I think you're ODD. Never heard of that diagnosis. I said, what's that? He says, you are very odd. And then he says, and I'm going to be your sponsor. I've been in AA 13 seconds. I know his name, I know his problem, and now he's going to make it mine. I can just tell. Who's the timer? We got a timer? Okay. The next 5 years and 5 days, I went to meetings on a regular basis and did not try to stop drinking, had no interest in stopping drinking. As a matter of fact, Clarence S. was my sponsor's sponsor. And I guess he had had a chat with Clarence about me. And their meetings were closed at the time. They asked me if I had a desire to stop drinking, and I told the truth. I said, no, I don't. And you know what they did? They had a group conscious meeting, and they voted to open the meetings so I could sit in there. Think about that. Or I wouldn't be here. And for 5 years and 5 days, I followed that man around like he was God. I know he's not, but there's something about him. I didn't want to quit drinking, but there's something about him. The way he lived. And every now and then I'd get back to my dumpster and there'd be a couple of bucks in the bottom. There'd be a pack of cigarettes. One day there was a carton of Pall Mall rats. I knew where they were coming from. He didn't make me ask. He didn't humiliate me. He knew what I needed. And he didn't give me too much. Now I know what he was doing. He was just like a bird. He was like just giving me little drops of bread. You know how they are. And on November 8th, 1977, I took what it appears to have been, up to this day, my last drink. I didn't quit. I was sitting at the steps of my home group, drinking warm Budweiser, waiting for the noon meeting. I had drank three cans, with three more in my lap, going to drink them. Barney showed up and said, why don't you come in and help me set up for the meeting? He didn't say, you've been drinking, you can't come in. He says, why don't you come in and help me set up for the meeting? I don't know why I did. But I hid those other three cans of beer in the bush in case Big Book Bob showed up. Might need them. Big Book Bob needed to die. I prayed and prayed and prayed, and he would not die. And I went in and helped Barney set up for the meeting. And in the meantime, another newcomer flew in. He was so drunk he couldn't stand up, so I helped him stand up. And I heard myself say, after 5 years and 5 days, I said, hi, my name's Wayne B. And I didn't think to say I'm ADD. I didn't think to say I'm OCD. I said, I'm an alcoholic. Because that's what Barney said to me. And then I said, and I'm going to be your sponsor. That got Barney's attention. Barney come running over there when he heard me say, I'll be your sponsor. And I see Barney coming, so I know he's going to poach him because I know how you are. So I pulled Jimmy behind me, and I'm holding him up by the belt, right? And I said, thank you. And Barney says, I think he's going to take you from me, right? Because he's mine. I got him. And Barney says, do you mind if I co-sponsor him? He didn't take him away from me. Because, you know, Barney knew that as sick as I was, I needed someone new to work with. Today, that might not be allowed in some places. Me and Jimmy are sober 39 years the same day. I got him by 3 hours, never let him forget it. I want you to know I've been through a lot. I've had numerous spiritual awakenings. My heart's been healed. My spirit's healed. I'm calm most times. I have experienced that transformation that this book talks about. There's a part of me that wishes it would have happened 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 39 years ago. But that is not how it is, kids. If you're new, it will happen for you if you're willing to work for it. But we don't know when that's going to take place. But I know this, if you've got a newcomer in one hand and you've got this program in the other one, God's looking out after all of that. And so I'm renewing my decision tonight. I'm renewing my decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him. And I understand Him to be my new employer. I understand Him to be my director. I understand that I'm His agent. I'm His employee. And my job is to be here tonight to carry AA's message so that a newcomer might identify with a simple thing of the effect produced by alcohol. And lastly, in chapter 11, Bill writes a miracle, in my opinion. He says, do we have a sufficient substitute? He's talking about for the effect produced by alcohol. This is what got me. Do we have a sufficient substitute? He said, yes. And vastly more than that. We have a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was that fellowship that loved me, gave me time to work the steps, to take those steps, and to get free. And I've experienced the two goals of AA, and I'm experiencing them tonight. Goal number one is victory over alcohol, and I have that just for today. But the big one, what alcohol used to do for me every time, is grant me freedom from the bondage of self. And that is exactly what the 12 steps in this fellowship afford me, is freedom from the bondage of self.